we were just sitting around whinging, and then we looked at each other and we were like, well, either we can just stop whinging or we can do something about it.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the Dental Head Start podcast. I'm David Keir, and I want to say I really appreciate you guys joining us. And thank you for your support over the last couple of episodes. I know it's a pretty small milestone, but they say, I think most podcasts last only 7 episodes. So to get to double digits, I'm pretty happy. I'm really enjoying this, and I hope you guys are getting a lot out of this as well. It's early days, but we've got some big dreams for what Dental Head Start can do for the dental community. We've got some pretty awesome collaborations and partnerships lined up that we're excited to talk about in the near future. But for now, let's get on to this episode. This week, we've got someone who is a bunch of energy and who has a really great story. It's Stephen Dudgeon from Avenue Dental Caloundra. Stephen and Eli Berger run the Australian Dental Graduates of the Year Award and Australian Dental Mini Residency, something I was fortunate enough to go through with these guys. And I know that they are really trying their best to help dental students and dental graduates in Australia. Unfortunately, Eli was unwell tonight, so we have just Stephen on the podcast and he won't disappoint. We'll have Eli and Steve later. We'll have Eli on his own as well. But for now, Stephen's story is a very interesting one. Steve shares his whole story from the start. He talks about how he got into dentistry, how he has learnt what he has. He does a ton of aesthetic and full mouth and implant work, stuff that takes a lot to get into and to get good at. And he's a very young dentist, really doing a great job. He also, himself and Eli, own and run Avenue Dental, a dental practice that now has 3 locations. It's a huge practice that's doing extremely well. In fact, they won the best place to work under 100 employees in all of Australia for any type of business twice. I think that's unbelievable, and I think that really shows that they know what they're talking about when they talk about practice culture, when they talk about practice building, and dentistry in general. If you're a dental student and you haven't already heard of the Australian Dental Graduate of the Year Award, I suggest you find them on Facebook or find their website. It's something you really need to enter. It's absolutely worth it if you're lucky enough to go on their course. And while you're on Facebook, I'd really appreciate if you like our page, share it with a friend, let someone else know, find us on Instagram as well. And of course, hit that subscribe button for the podcast so you get these episodes every time they come out. For now, I hope you enjoy this interview. I'd love to hear your feedback. Let's get into the show. Have you ever had a complaint made against you? It feels terrible. I had one myself last year. It was a frivolous claim about money in a situation where I'd done nothing wrong, but at the same time, it made me feel terrible. So, of course, I called my insurer, Dental Protection Limited, and they came in to bat straight away. I really appreciated their help. They supported me through it. They helped me construct my responses, and we had a really good outcome. There was no concern at all in the end. As dentists, complaints are inevitable, so you want someone to come in and bat in your corner. DPL did that for me, and I appreciate them and their support for me and their support for the Dental Head Start podcast. Don't forget to renew your membership before June 30.
Now that I do have a tendency to just tell long-winded stories.
Man, go for it. That's what I want.
And then possibly don't actually have a point in the end.
That's cool.
So, so that's about it. But in terms of starting to have an interest in dentistry, I always liked going to the dentist when I was little. So I used to love the taste. I was like, what's that banana taste stuff? It must be Endurofab.
But I was
like, Mum, can I go to the dentist? And so I always loved going when I was little. Now, part of it as well, because our next door neighbor, or the guy across the road, Brian Ma, was our dentist. Yeah. And he's just a absolute gentleman, or I'll say a dentleman. appreciate you actually laughing at that.
Yeah. Plenty of people laughing in their car right now.
Exactly, that's it. he lived across the road from us growing up. He was the best babysitter we ever had. So he used to come around, we go, Mum, Dad, could Brian babysit us? And eventually that, Brian. Okay, so Brian rock up just with a six-pack newspaper, put the TV on, and just look at us and go, you guys do whatever you want. That was it. And so then we, no, he didn't even say that. So we just got to the then Brian would fall asleep at some point. Watching the TV would come up and realize Brian's asleep. And eventually then it'd be mum and dad would come home, like the cab would pull into the driveway, Brian would wake up and he'd go, quick, you guys go to bed, pretend you're asleep. And that was it. I suppose I had an awesome dentist.
I was going to say you had a real personal relationship as well. You could trust him. You know, you had no reason to be fearful, which I guess a lot of kids go in and they have no idea what a dentist is or what they're like and never met one before. So it's cool to have that exposure really young. Exactly. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Sherwood in Brisbane, which is, again, I really liked it. Just went to Graceville State School nearby there. Yeah, cool. Went to high school at St. Peter's at Indooroopilly. Then
did you like school? Were you a go-getter from the beginning? Because you're a go-getter now.
I was always like a mega nerd. And then I was always really, I just like whatever it was, I generally tried harder than everyone else.
Just pretty competitive.
Not really externally competitive. I'd just say like internally driven. I didn't want to let myself down. And so whatever it was, I'd just try harder, train harder, whatever it was, study harder. So I just always had that drive inside me. My grandfather actually passed away about 2 years ago, and I was at his funeral and just hearing about everything that he did in his life, and I didn't even realize like half of what he achieved. But he was always just like, he could not sit still. He just had like an incredible work ethic. So he was a farmer on the Darling Downs, but also has worked for the Queensland Butter Board, worked for the Lutheran Church, did a whole range of things. And it was incredible hearing how he managed to do all this. And so, and then I feel my mum then inherited a lot of that, and then myself and my two brothers also just generally able to keep going. So we often at the end of an evening or an end of the day of work, we're still able to just keep kicking along. I didn't get it from my I was going to say I didn't get it from my dad. but with that, my dad had he's really, really smart, really loving and caring, and has just an amazing way he views the world. But that real bias for action would probably not be something that is a real strength of his.
So compassion from dad and action from mum.
Mum is also extremely loving and caring. Everyone loves her mum. Mum an awesome cook as well.
That's great. So do you think that that drive you got, you said, you know, it was just recently he passed away and you learned a lot more about his life. Did you get that drive, do you think, innately? Or did you get exposed to, say, your mum's drive or your siblings' drive and that kind of form it?
I feel I was just had that innately. I just feel I've always been super energetic and like really enthusiastic.
Well, I definitely know that about you from doing the dental mini residency course. So we'll get into all that and the award and all the bits of that later on. So you went through school, Indooroopilly for high school, and then obviously dentistry. How did dentistry come about?
Well, I remember back in, I was just thinking about this when you've asked the question, that I remember at year 11 and then there's some school party and I was having some drinks, and then I remember thinking, oh, it'd be awesome to be a dentist. And I said this out loud and then everyone looked at me and thought that was a weird thing to say. so obviously earlier days that it sort of started on me. Then for me, I was really tossing up medicine or dentistry.
As a lot of people do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, I went, I spoke to lots and lots of people. So went and sat in with a number of dentists, sat in with some doctors, spoke to lots of people. And generally the doctors didn't seem like they liked their job as much. So I went and sat in with Brian Maher as well, who mentioned previously up in Gympie, and it was funny. So he was like, you should definitely do medicine. But then then when I actually saw him working, he loved it. And he was so passionate and so enthusiastic about it. And I'm like, but look at him. And then when I sat in the doctor said, you should only do medicine if you feel it's your absolute calling in life. Like, it's the reason you've been put on this earth. Then you should do it. And I did not feel that that was my reason that I'd been put on this earth. So I was like, okay. And then I had done 2 years of science, and then they had an intake for dentistry. So I applied, got in, and then I had about 6 weeks where I could decide. I could either go back and finish my science degree, or I could change over to medicine. So I did 6 weeks of dentistry, and once I started, I was like, this is awesome. I'm just loving it. That was it. It was like straight away. It was actually the first day we had orientation, and it was great. Just got into it. Then they had like free drinks and happy hour at the end of it. I was like, this is the best alcohol in this. I love tea. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. It's a good feeling to kind of know you're on the right path. And I guess everyone finds that feeling at a different time, and we all go through ebbs and flows of really loving it and then, you know, having our struggle time. You're a super energetic, enthusiastic person. If anyone's met you, they know that, and they'll get it from this podcast. But have you had ups and downs in your career? Have you, like, you loved it day one, but and you love it now, I guess, but has there been any period of time where not so much?
Probably I've always really enjoyed what I do, but it might be more challenges, I'd say. So I remember when I first graduated, and just the intense concentration I found really hard. So I remember getting, like, the first year of dentistry, often I would come home and then I would sit down on the couch and looking at the TV, but I didn't turn the TV on, and just like stared at the blankness for like half an hour, just let my mind catch up, which I'd never experienced that before. Just the amount of concentration, I suppose, like, I just wanted to do the best for my patients, but that learning curve in the first year out is really challenging.
It certainly is. And it's something you're saying, that actually the stress, I guess we can call it stress, the focus in the first year out, it's actually harder than uni. Uni's stressful for different reasons, but I think the pressures of, you know, making the right decision, the emotional and social pressures of working with patients and, you know, what we go through in our first year is challenging. And I think people need to realize that that's, if you feel that way, that's completely normal and it's okay as long as you're talking to people and getting through it. And it does get better. Like, I'm 3 years out, I'm a bit more comfortable now. Obviously, I have my bad days, and I'm sure you're – how many years out are you, Steve?
Like 13 or so.
getting there. Yeah.
I know. It's flown by. I just can't believe how quickly it's gone. But, yeah, so, I definitely agree. This, the first year was a steep learning curve, and just there was so much to learn. Like, I think the universities do a great job.
Yeah, I agree.
But at the same time, there is so much left in that first year out, just to transition into the workforce, and obviously most dentists work in the private sector, and it's just a whole different ball game. So, yeah, definitely that was the challenge for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When did you find it to start to get a bit easier after all that?
Well, I was actually really fortunate. I had Dr. Bell, Richard Bell, who hired me straight out of uni. And then I'll go on a slight tangent. So I was actually also like so fortunate when myself and Eli graduated. There was just like, there was so many jobs available. I remember I said that I was willing to go outside of Brisbane. So I was really looking for somewhere coastal. And it's like I had about 20 job offers. And so then I got all picky about it, and like, oh, this one doesn't have rotary endo, or like, oh, this, they don't have an OPG at this practice. And I was getting like, or like a bit ahead of myself. But what I was so fortunate in the end, the decision I made was because Dr. Bell was just a fantastic person and he was able to mentor me. That was the reason. It wasn't any of the fancy bells or whistles. It was just the man, and
the most important part by far.
Yeah, and a little side note with him. So he's actually just last year celebrated 50 years of dentistry.
Yeah,
which is, so he's 73, still working with us, and yeah, just a my amazing person. He's still vibrant, so full of energy.
So good.
He's currently hiking through Italy.
So that's great. I hope I'm doing that at 7.
Exactly. So
I never got to meet Richard, but one day, if I'm lucky, I will.
Yeah.
He's a good dude. That's so good and so important to have a mentor, or kind of like, you know, your first job, if you can choose it for mentorship. But it's kind of hard. Like, how did you know Dr. Bell would be a mentor to you?
Was he
quite open with it?
Yeah, I generally find I'm externally sense people's feelings and that kind of thing. So I can get a fairly good read of people initially. Maybe I'm a bit too naively optimistic about people as well. I always see the best in others, so occasionally I'm not always right. He just was there. He was willing to put time and effort into me, which was great. It just helped that first year and really eased a lot of the stress and a lot of the challenges. And also, like, the standard dentistry he was doing was fantastic.
So it inspired you at the same time.
Yeah, and it probably, like, the only thing that it wasn't as structured a program. Maybe it was more so case by case learning. It would be like, what do I do here? I've got this patient and I have no idea what I'm doing. And that would always be like, Richard is right here. So it was a case by case, and just learning through my errors. Was it, but he certainly did help me not have quite so many errors here. So he certainly let me learn from a lot of his errors. And like 50 years of dentistry, you can imagine how many little tips and tricks he's picked up over the years.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so important. Did you study, were you a UQ graduate?
Yeah, University of Queensland, correct.
Yeah. How did you find uni? Did you find, so you've always been a pretty hard worker and you dived into dentistry and started enjoying it. Did you work really hard at uni and go really well, or did you start partying, or how'd it go?
Yeah, as I said, always been a super nerd, so always did study really hard, but I more so I studied intensely during the SWAT VAC period, which is like the, is that what you called it, SWAT VAC as well?
I know the name, but yeah. I can't remember. It's studying, back, maybe? Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever the like 2 weeks before exams, I was really good at cramming.
Had a system.
That was I remember towards the end of uni, we used to go to our mate Johnny Martin's house. So it was myself, Eli, and our other mate, Will Hun. And so there'd be a whole bunch of us just living in this house studying. And I had a routine. I'd go to bed somewhere between 12 and 2 a.m., wake up at 9 a.m. and just do that, constantly studying for the whole time. Johnny would then end up, I'd be getting up at 9 a.m. and he would just be going to bed.
Oh, God.
And then Eli and Will somewhere in between. It was just like this funny thing. So even that, I've got like fond memories of of study time. But yes, we always studied very intensely then. But the rest of the term, I certainly enjoyed myself, like Eli myself, the social conveners. of the social club,
you still are, right?
Other people, we still do enjoy social community. So, so we're like manning the bar with a few other people in our third year, and the Friday night happy hours were always a fair hoot. So it was pretty fun.
How was it living with other dental students, going through it together? Do you think that's something you'd recommend to people?
I still lived at home through uni.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But then just for study time, I went there. Yeah. But in final year, I got to live a whole year with Eli.
Yeah.
So I had 6 months living with his parents and Eli up at Yeppoon, and then we had 6 months living in Maryborough. Probably like from a cleanliness and point of view, I would not recommend it. But from a fun point of view, it was awesome.
Good times.
Yeah.
Was that for placement? Did you do
that? Was our clinical placement. Yeah. So we had 2 20-week placements. One was up at Rockhampton, and we had Don Knowles, who was a fantastic guy. And so he was our demonstrator, and he just taught us a whole bunch about the extractions and how to really do things well. And then in Maribor after that for the second stint.
Yeah, that's cool. So you guys did a lot longer stint than we did. We did a rural placement. It was just 4 weeks for Sydney Uni. So it's quite different. I'm sure that teaches you, because you get different demographics when you move around. So it teaches you a bunch of different stuff. And often on rural placements, EXO is something that people pick up a lot more on. So that sounds like it would have helped you a lot.
Yep, certainly. Yeah, both locations we did a fair few. There was certainly no shortage of. We didn't do many crowns though.
Yeah, I imagine.
Certainly didn't do any veneers or implants or anything like that. But I did do a bunch of extractions and a heap of fillings and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So how are the years after graduation? You said you worked for Dr. Bell, and that was that at Maroochydore, where the Avenue practice is now.
No, in Caloundra.
Caloundra. Yeah.
Yeah, so we worked there, which was probably for the first few years, the training programs and lecturing programs weren't as good when I first graduated. So the quality of education out there now is just amazing. Like with the internet
and the access to it.
Yeah. And the access, like when I graduated, Facebook didn't exist. I don't even know if Google existed. Like that's the level that YouTube didn't exist. So that's the level we were at. So you'd be like, I want to learn about all this stuff, but how do I find a way to do it? And the quality courses were certainly nowhere near. I think with the mandatory CPD requirements, and there's been a huge raising in the standard of lecturers and lecture content, which is fantastic. So people from that point of view are so lucky nowadays. So I found I had to sort of find content in all these different areas. There wasn't like one course that really offered what I wanted. Like it was, say, trying to learn about full mouth rehabs, then it was trying to do a whole range, like 10 different courses on different aspects of it to finally sort of piece things together to something where now it's like, okay, here's a course on how to do full mouth rehabs. People are very fortunate nowadays.
Did you choose specific areas in your first couple of years of CPD to dive into, or did you kind of just, shotgun approach, just did what looked good?
For me, probably I looked at what areas I did the most of, and so focused on that initially. So really it was like fillings, root canals and crowns. Initially, so I just wanted to get good at the things that I was doing mostly. But then after that, I felt, okay, I've got a good degree of competence in those areas. So then I started to look at, well, what next? And I suppose I've always been like that throughout my whole time of learning and study. It's always like, oh, well, what next now? Like I feel like...
Yeah, let's push it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So then it was more getting into... aesthetics and full mouth rehabs and that side of things. And after that, then dental implants was something I'm really good into. So that's sort of the major areas. Like I mostly, I still did general dentistry. I really liked doing everything. But it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm restricting my practice. But I don't know, like today I did an implant on a gentleman at the end of the day. But then... before that, I did a crown on someone and did some fillings on someone else and then had an exam before that. So it's sort of like I like the variation. But then probably, yeah, more so now I do more implants, full mouth rehabs and aesthetic work. And that's more so what I do. I got to do a root canal last week, which I was super pumped by. Eli's a gun at root canals. He steals all the root canals. So I was super excited to get to do one.
It's interesting. I guess the bigger the practice you're in, especially if you're someone who's been there for a while or an owner of that practice, you tend to niche down a little bit into those more complex treatments or implants or aesthetics. I see that in most practices that are fairly large. How did you dive into implants pretty deep, I think. How did you kind of learn about that? What was your path for implants?
I just did a whole heap of courses. But again, as I said, it probably wasn't as good as how things are nowadays. So again, when I was first getting into it, I don't think even any of the graduate diplomas in implants were offered then. So I just was fortunate to get, I almost volunteered at a practice where they were, did dental implants. So I was just getting to learn, watch the periodontist there doing it. And then I sort of got to assist during surgeries. And then in the end, then I got to place on patients. If I like brought my own patients, then they were letting me place on patients. So that was how I did it.
Like a little residency, really.
Yeah, it was. So I worked a day a week for, I think, about 18 months to go through that process. So that was the major thing. But before that, I'd done a whole bunch of weekend courses, so at least half a dozen different courses, probably 10 different courses on different aspects of dentistry and different systems.
Did you reach out to the place you're working a day a week? Did you reach out and say, hey, can I check out what you're doing? Or was it a thing that they kind of looked for? How did that work?
I don't even remember, to be honest. I think maybe I reached out. I can't remember. Maybe it was at a course. Yeah. I bumped into someone.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool. Maybe I can come along and just check it out. And then that's how it sort of evolved.
Yeah. Do you recommend people who want to get into more complex treatments, using implants as an example, do you recommend they, you know, make the effort to go and observe and get to know someone who could become a mentor in that way? How do you think people should go about it now?
I think getting a good theoretical background is important first to anything. So maybe it's good just to be able to see what it's actually like. So similar when I went into dentistry, just to see what does actual dentistry look like on a day-to-day basis and getting to experience that. So maybe just being able to see what does implant dentistry look like would be helpful. But then I think before then going on, oh, okay, that's easy. Because if it's someone who's an absolute wizard, they come in and they're just like, they've got these like freaking magical fingers that just like, yeah. Oh, and it's done. And you go,
it looks easy, yeah.
Yeah, that was easy. I could do that. But it's not as easy as they make it look.
Don't know what you don't know. It's one of my favorite sayings.
That's so true. I like in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice. And in practice, there is.
Yeah, that's it.
So theoretical background first, and then once you've got a solid foundation, and I really the ITI, I've really enjoyed all their stuff. Like I read a number of other textbooks, but I found the ITI treatment guides fantastic, and I think they've got a new program out which just is such a good basis for being able to do the theoretical basis for implant dentistry.
When do you think someone's ready for implants?
I think the first thing I would be getting a solid basis in treatment planning first. So when someone can execute more like a full mouth rehab and treatment plan full mouth cases with ease, that would then be the point where
going away from single tooth dentistry to a whole comprehensive look on things. Yeah.
If people are still thinking, oh, like I can't raise a vertical dimension, or how am I going to approach this? Like if they can only look at it tooth by tooth and not go, what's the best situation for this person? I feel then that planning stage is going to be wrong with dental implants. It'll just be there's a space, I'll put an implant in there, which might not necessarily be the best result for every person.
Yeah, definitely. Do you, with treatment planning, it's something that I think a lot of graduates struggle with, the private practice treatment planning or money and all the extra stuff that goes into it. Do you have any advice for graduates like coming out, I guess, in a couple of months or just got out to think about when they are treatment planning or when they're talking about money or any of that kind of stuff?
I always think the one thing we can do to help people is to fix their teeth. So that's what we do. And so if people don't accept treatment or don't go ahead with the treatment, we haven't helped that person. Now, the one caveat to that is making sure that we're treatment planning ethically so that then all the treatment we do is what we would choose to do ourselves or in our mum or dad, assuming we like our parents. So that's really it. So people then, that's what I do with my mum or dad. I know that's the best for this person and I've got the absolute best, like the patient's best them at heart when making decisions. Well, that's what's key.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something. It's easy for people to under treatment plan because they're scared about the money or they're worried the patient won't accept it or they may judge the patient. And that's a big mistake early on, I think, a lot of people make. If you're not telling them what, you know, is really going on, giving them the best options, you're actually letting them down. And I think in a way, if a lot of people talk about selling dentistry as if it's this really dirty thing. And of course, if you're selling what you don't believe in, then that is actually unethical. But if you truly believe that's what's best and you can guide them to understanding where you're coming from, then you're doing your job. So communication is such an important part of that. And graduates often struggle with it. Do you think, do you have any, I guess, advice early on? I know you do the course, which we'll get to, but with communication in graduates and anything that you see them often making mistakes with and that they can fix pretty easily?
What I was thinking about was just back to treatment planning. So I remember like having conversations with people, people then going, I'm the most ethical. I'm too ethical. And then sort of be like, so they were so ethical that they would do the absolute cheapest restorations that they could for people, sort of just be doing like a temporary Fuji on something because they were so ethical. And then I'd be like, so what would you do though if that was your tooth? Oh, I would have a crown. And okay, so you would have a crown, but then your patients, all they get is temporary Fujis. Yes, because I'm very ethical. And I'm like, don't you see there's like a disconnect there that I don't know, if you deserve a better standard of treatment than your patients do, is essentially what I'm seeing there. So I've had that conversation with lots of people, and then it's like, no, I'm just ethical. That was our thing. Yeah. So definitely.
That's a really good way to put it, actually. The two wide, sparse treatment options, they're completely different. If you wouldn't pick one for yourself, then if you're expecting your patients to have it, then it's hard to argue that's ethical.
So then in terms of communication, I think the number one thing is just rapport. And I love people. And so I love all my patients. They're wonderful. So I always have a chat with them and catch up about things and what's happening in their life. And like I had a patient today, and she just had her second grandson born. And no, sorry, second great grandson. Sorry. So it's like, I don't know. Everyone, I love dealing with all my patients. So I think if you can build great rapport with people, that's a huge start. And once you have a trusting relationship with people, well, then things work. If you don't have that trusting, if it's a complete absence of trust in the relationship, well, nothing doesn't matter. You can't do any like some technique. How do you work this out? Once you're in this situation where the patient is like reached over and they're strangling you, what's the best thing to say at that point? And you're like, oh, well, possibly there might have been something prior to that would have been, let's not deal with this end point of the strangling. If there was a point prior to that we could have avoided the strangling, that would have been the thing to deal with. So probably that rapport building first. Then the other thing I think confidence in treatment planning really flows through to communication, that if you're uncertain and you really don't know, it just shows that people don't have confidence in you. So, but I think even you can state, I don't know the best solution here, so I'm actually going to go away and ask this person. I have a friend who's a specialist in this, and then so I'm going to get the best possible advice for you. You can still say, I don't know, with conviction.
That's right. You can be confident that you're not quite sure, but I'm going to find you. Yeah. I'm going to find you the best answer, and then they trust you for going above and beyond.
Yeah, so even that, but then just being completely unsure and not backing yourself and lacking that confidence, I think is a big problem.
definitely.
And especially then if you've got a baby face like you, mate, then
you're not much better. This is why I do podcasts. Same going on YouTube, that's for sure.
Remember the last time you asked if you're old enough to be a dentist, have you?
Oh, mate, yesterday.
Yesterday, okay, fair enough. It's been like 2 years for me. I've lost it now.
That's it. Losing confidence. Actually, it was this week or last week. So, yeah, no, it happens all the time.
Still got it.
Yeah, still got it. I'm losing my hair now. So, I just showed them the top of my head and they're like, oh, you are old. Oh,
that's pretty funny. I high five the last person that said it. And I high five and then they're like, hit it, but I didn't know. They're like, why is that? And I'm like, oh, because I'm like 35. So I'm like, this is awesome. And they're like, really?
That's so good. You mentioned building rapport, and it's something that I think comes easier to some people than it does to others. And like personally, when I'm meeting a patient, I really want to get to know them, and I like to share a little bit about myself and build rapport. I actually really enjoy it. Just like you said, I really enjoy hanging out with my patients and knowing them. But I think a lot of people also want to be, just the dentist in a way or not wanting to share too much. Do you think it's possible to build rapport and have that relationship without sharing much about yourself?
For me, no. But I think that's just a personal opinion. So I'm very open about all these things and happy to be vulnerable. And so I couldn't. It just doesn't feel right for me not to open up, and then I'm often the first person to open up and share. Not for me, but yes, obviously for other people, you just got to work with what your strengths are.
And
if it's like you completely feel so uncomfortable saying anything about yourself, well, then that's obviously going to shine through as well.
Yeah, that's a good way to answer that, actually, because I sometimes think about it because I share a lot and I think, oh, I wonder, if I didn't want to share, I'd find it harder. But I guess that's my personality. Like you said, it's your personality. And so everyone's personality is different, and therefore there's no script for everyone. Everyone's different.
But you're the best version of you.
Yeah,
that's a good way of saying it. So I think that's it. You just got to be your best version of you.
Yeah, that's great. So So you learned some implants, you got back, or you were continuing to work in Caloundra. And then what happened after that?
Probably the next big step was then getting into practice ownership.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
How did that come about?
Ended up buying into the practice, and I just realized I was completely out of my depth. I could do dentistry well, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I'm like, I'm a nice guy. It'll be sweet.
Yeah, this will be fine.
and it wasn't. So it's not quite enough just being a nice guy and being good at dentistry. I was completely out of my depth. Like, it was like mass resignations threatened at times, that kind of thing. Both Eli and I had different times where each of us were the instigators of somehow unwittingly causing the threat of mass resignation. So all this kind of stuff. And so we found it. The first thing was us actually growing as ourselves. We had to just get better. So we recognized this. The first thing probably did is reached out to practice management consultants. So I worked with Prime Practice, and they were good. But then I don't know, I was sort of searching for a feeling of how it would be when I walked into the practice. That was what I was wanting, is like, and so it just never quite felt right. Even though it's like, oh, I've got this system and this is all working, but I'm like, that's great, but it still just nothing quite felt right. So it felt like I was the one having to pull the whole team along, and it was all just like the weight of the whole practice, everything was on me. And so it was up to me to bill, me to do everything. And so it just wasn't a great start at all.
Yeah. What mistakes did you make that led to that?
Really, I'd say it was just who I was the issue.
Yeah. Okay.
as a person. So at that point, I wasn't as self-aware. I was more reactive, more selfish. And not saying, like, I still felt I was a nice person. Like, I wasn't a jerk to people. I wasn't just going around and spitting in people's faces just for the fun of it. but it, I just, yeah, I would react emotionally to situations. I'd take things as a feedback, as a personal attack. I'd get defensive, I'd blame externally, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, pretty common stuff that a lot of people, I guess, do and don't even realize they do, and it's pretty normal. So you moved through that with a bit of self-awareness or a bit of self-help stuff, or how did that go?
Yeah, so really I discovered books. So I used to read like fantasy books, like with dragons and magic and that kind of thing. I haven't actually watched the final Game of Thrones season, so don't ruin that for me. So I just started reading different business books, personal growth books. Interesting facts. So I saw a guy, John Spence, present, and so he said the average number of books that a graduate of a degree reads per year to improve in their career or as a person, 0.5 books per year.
0.5. Okay.
So then you're saying if you read 6 books per year, you're in the top 1% of Australia, and if you read 12 books per year, you're in the top 1% of the world.
Yeah, and then you set a goal and you hit 20 books a year.
Yeah, that's it. So then I was like, well, generally tried to read 2 books a month. That was
that's awesome.
That was the goal, to try to keep learning. And the fact I was a mega nerd from the start, this is the new thing. I suck at running a business. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I'm actually going to have to like admit that to myself and then start learning.
I digest like audiobooks and podcasts like so much. That's why I obviously run a podcast. But yeah, it's been huge. And I actually recommend getting into a lot of those personal growth stuff. If you're interested in building yourself as well as, you know, your career and just, you know, doing stuff for fun, it's, it's awesome. There's so much good stuff out there. I'm pretty much hooked.
I remember the biggest realization for me, and it might seem really basic to a lot of people listening, but maybe some people might be eye-opening as well, I hope. I was reading 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and it was saying in between a stimulus and our response, we actually have the ability to choose our response.
Yeah, it's profound.
I'm like, oh, wow. I could. And I'm like, all this time, like, she made me upset or whatever. He made me angry. And I'm like, no, actually, I could choose whatever response. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I'm like, why didn't someone just like mention this to me earlier in my life? Why do I have to get to would it be like 29 or something like that, 30?
I actually had the same profound moment with that concept of a thing is only good or bad based on your perception of that thing. So the way you look at it is actually the way you feel about it, and you can change that, you can affect that. I had the same profound moment, so I'm glad to hear we're both, you know, everyone else is thinking we're a bit slow maybe, but I hope someone else out there thinks that's pretty cool and uses that tip. In practice, you got this practice or into ownership of this practice. Eli also is part owner in this practice.
Yeah, so that was then the next thing was then I asked my best friend Eli Berger to buy half the practice. Yeah. I love the quote, my best friend is the one who brings out the best in me, by Henry Ford. And I think that's how it is with Eli and myself.
That's cool.
That we certainly do bring out the best in each other, and sort of we're both better as a result of being friends and being business partners.
What do you think the secret to working together is? I guess you're obviously friends and you obviously gel personalities and all the rest of it, but You know, not every time do people go into partnerships and the sum of the two parts become more of just than the sum. So how do you do that?
For us, I suppose it'd be a range of things. I don't have a simple one thing. But firstly, I couldn't imagine being in partnership now with someone who I wasn't friends with. It just feels right for me. But I know everyone's like, oh, don't mix business and friendship, and lots of people say that. But I just couldn't imagine not being in partnership with my best friend.
That's awesome.
So we always used to get drunk at uni back in late at the happy hours where we were serving a drink, and then we were like, oh, how awesome it would be if we owned our own practice together. Like, yeah, man, that would be so sick. And we'd like really want this. And then it just felt like a dream. And then for it to actually become a reality, we're like, oh, my goodness, we get to work together every day. How cool is this? But then some other things. So neither of us sweat the small stuff at all. So it's something that it's not like, oh, I noticed that I just was using the Bushels tea bags and you had Dilmah tea bags, Eli. So at the end of the month, we'll be squaring up this ledger because I noticed that Dilmah costs an extra dollar per 300 tea bags. So we don't worry about little things. We try to let that. And then the other thing is we do speak really openly about things. So if there is a problem, we just bring it up straight away. But then we just know each other, like we have both have each other's back. And it's just like, the best thing. As I said, I couldn't imagine not being in partnership with a friend.
Yeah, that's really cool. I guess you do hear stories where I get, friends go into partnership and it doesn't work out, but it's really awesome to see your story where it's worked out better than I guess anyone can really imagine. In fact, so Avenue Dental is the practice you own, and they won the best place to work for under 100 employees. Not just a dental practice, but any business under 100 employees twice. That's incredible.
It was the coolest
thing. You must be still pinching yourself.
I am. I know. It's incredible. Like, so for me then, what I've become most interested in, like my biggest interest is really like strategy and culture, and then creating a great workplace environment and a great workplace culture. That's what I really love. So to then win an award in what is most, like what I love most is the best. And it's like, we do have such an awesome team. Like I love all of them at Avenue Dental. Like everyone is just so wonderful. Like I feel so fortunate every day for all the people I get to go to work with. And they all put in, like they all work hard, but we also have an awesome time together. So I feel so fortunate. So then to actually be recognized for that is just the best.
That's really awesome.
I can't imagine. I don't know what the hell I'll do to top that ever.
It's like, you can just retire now.
I know. Well, that's it. Well, Rich is not retired and he's 73, so I'm like, I can't retire yet. That would just seem lazy. So I don't know. I'll have to find something to top it. Who knows?
That's great. I'm sure you will. So, workplace culture is a – it's a big part of something you're actually really passionate about and got this award. What led to that? What is the workplace culture that makes it so great to work there? And what have you done to facilitate?
So probably it all started back when Eli first bought the practice. I bought into partnership with myself. So I was like, okay, now there are two of us. And it was for the first time I felt we could actually get our heads above the water.
So, financially or HR?
Just like understanding the business, just probably I'd say time.
Yeah.
That would probably be the biggest thing, just to get a little bit of space and time. Because before that, it'd be like all my discretionary time is taken up doing other things in the business. So to be able to then just actually get the time to go, how can we grow? How can we create something amazing? And it just didn't exist. So we could finally then just get space to breathe and some time to actually start thinking, what is it that we really want to do? So as you said, we really had that bias for learning, and both of us also.
Eli shares that with you, doesn't he?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
He's like currently doing a master's of finance, but both of us just really enjoy learning, but we also like putting things into action as well. So we're both like,
which is the key.
Yeah, exactly. I can't, vision without action is merely daydreaming, but vision with action can change the world, I think is a
beautiful quote.
So, so we've got to actually do something. We can't just read something and think that's a nice concept. Mm-hmm.
Or listen to podcasts.
So, I don't know, with when we first started to do things, we're like, read some book on how to do it. We're like, okay, we'll implement this. And we're like, oh, that didn't work. Oh, now we implement this. And so we just kept on doing it. And it was like we didn't get any traction. It was like 2 years of us just trying to implement things. From every podcast or every book we read or whatever else, and it just didn't, nothing happened. Like, in fact, we probably, I can't remember, at least flatline, but maybe even went back in terms of revenue. So we realized then, that was sort of the point, we actually realized that rather than just learning, we actually had to grow as people. So for us, one of the most important steps was clarify our own personal values. Then we clarified our family values, and then also clarified the values for our work for Avenue Dental, and also clear on what our purpose is. Our purpose is positively transforming dentistry, and our values are get power, so growth, excellence, teamwork, passion, positive and fun, which is like small P, big O, so stop, and then wow. And with that also, it's like get pow, like the old school Batman movies, which might be before your time.
Then, it just reminds me of snowboarding. Pow.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's so good.
So then suddenly that became the change's core that then could start to get some traction and start to be really clear on what we stood for, what the business was all about. So that was probably the biggest thing. And after that, then we started to get a bit of traction. So I think everyone thought, again, it was just, here's just another thing that Steve and Eli are doing. And here we are, this is past next month, they'll go to some other course, or they'll go to some other thing, and then there'll be something different. But then we didn't give up. On this, we did. We were steadfast with that. And then with time, then it was like everyone was like, oh, this is staying, this is permanent. And so I think at that point it was just the people who were like, yep, this is where I belong, great, they stayed. And the people were like, oh, this is actually not, not what I'm about, then they opted out. And so just sort of that's how things worked. Then we clarified who we really wanted the organization, or who were like the best people in the organization. And we tried to just clone them pretty much. So then all the people we hired then were aligned with our values and our culture first. So then that just kept perpetuating the culture that we were trying to create.
Yeah. Yeah. So hiring based on that gave you, or made decisions easier, I would assume.
100%. Yeah.
If people didn't meet it, like, or if people weren't into that or agree with those values, it's such an easier situation to make a decision. You're talking about having enough time to plan for your business because Eli came on and you could breathe a little bit more. I think something a lot of dentists or young dentists do is they dive into private practice and then become so busy. And I'm a culprit of this, although I did start a podcast. you become so busy that you don't really have time to sit back, and plan and drive your own learning in dentistry or your own development, as opposed to just doing dentistry. Is that something you kind of, did you take time to set back early on when you started doing implants and full mouth stuff, or did it just kind of flow naturally?
I didn't take time really to plan things out hugely.
Yeah.
In the past. So when I was learning about full mouth rehabs or implants, it was just sort of, oh, now I'll do this. That was about the thought process that went into it. It wasn't that calculated or anything like that.
Do you think it's something graduates should do?
I really enjoy it. So now I've found it really benefits me. Probably also like when I was younger, like I was still going out on weekends and having too many drinks on weekend, and then like, well, I was going to say watching Netflix, but Netflix didn't exist then. Something on TV and eating KFC on the couch and feeling sorry for myself all day Sunday. So there's a whole lot of time that I could have had that I could have actually been doing this. But at the time I didn't have, I thought I had no time. maybe as well that having kids, then I realized how much time I had before having kids.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Much like yourself, I know. You're looking pretty good, mate. I have to say, you don't look too too sleepy at the moment. So,
oh man, sleep's that one thing I can't go without. But I've got an amazing wife, and she edits the podcast, so she's going to hear this. Thank you, Anita.
Okay, she's amazing. So great. You should say more than that, mate. That's...
I wouldn't want to bore off our listeners, but no, definitely. So with graduates, you're someone actually who has a fair idea of how graduates are, kind of how the community is, because you run this this award people may or may not have heard of, the Australian Dental Graduate of the Year Award, something you were foolish enough to give me in 2016. thank you very much. How did that come about?
Well, firstly, I'll just start with yourself, David. Like you won the Australian Graduate of the Year Award, and firstly, like your path through becoming a dentist, like you didn't just take an easy road. It really obviously was your calling in life. So obviously you worked in the field for how many years was it before even going into dentistry?
It was before even going in, would have been 10. I did a bit of travel in the middle, but, yeah, at least 10 then, and then about 14 or 15 by the time I finished it.
Yeah.
I say to patients I've been in the industry for 16 years now. I'm only 30. I'm not even 30.
Yeah. And that's it. And, like, so no one else had that story. And then I look at what you've created here with Dental Head Start and the podcast, everything like that, that you're giving back to graduates and giving back to the rest of the dental community. Like what more deserving person than yourself?
Well, it's worked out well. So thank you. So tell me, how did you start giving back with the award and the course? Because you're doing the same thing, obviously started well before us. You're a bit more organized than we are. And doing the course was an amazing thing for my development. In fact, it inspired a lot of what Dental Head Start is. So thank you for that. How did it come about?
Happy to help with that. Well, again, Eli and I were sitting around and whinging. We're sort of like, oh, dentistry is not what it used to be.
Geez, you've got to help.
That's what happened. We were sitting on the front porch in our rocking chairs and whinging about how it wasn't how it used to be. And then we were like, look at each other. We're like, oh, well, as I mentioned earlier, I had like about 20 job offers when I first graduated, and they were like, then the new graduates were like struggling to get positions, and then we were just sitting around whinging, and then we looked at each other and we were like, well, either we can just stop whinging or we can do something about it. So that's what are we going to do here? So that's where we decided, well, let's do something. So we started the Australian Dental Graduate of the Year Award back in 2014. Mm-hmm. And then with it, we just had an award for top dental graduate in Australia. So that was the what we were going to do, just to sort of promote graduates. And then we started talking to them all to interview them for who was going to be the winner. And they all had like all these great stories. They were a fantastic group of people. Mm-hmm. They seemed a lot more motivated than Eli and I were when we first graduated, I have to say. And we're like, we can't just like just give this award and then that's it. And so then we founded the Australian Dental Mini Residency after that. So we actually put on lectures 5 times throughout the year, where we go through the foundational aspects of general practice dentistry. And so this year, I think we've got about 20 people going through the program.
Oh, wow.
So it's really grown, and we just picked the top dental graduates in Australia and then want to give back and make their first year transition as well as good as it can possibly be. And probably as I mentioned earlier, where I found first year really challenging, and so did Eli, where with a really structured program, we feel we can ease a lot of that, those challenges, because we've been through it before and realize how hard it was.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. Like, shameless plug, but that course was amazing. It really did shape my first couple of years. And I think anyone who can get into that course, or any course or mentoring where you're a little bit structured in what you're learning and getting that transition from dental school into private practice, it's huge. There's so much we learn at dental school, and as I said before, the universities do a good job, but there's a lot that's missing. And that had a huge impact on myself, that's for sure. When you look at the graduates and their applications, what are you looking for?
A whole range of things. So it's interesting to see people like yourself who've had a real commitment to the profession, and it's like this is what they want to do. And they just are loved and enthused by dentistry.
Can I say I wasn't completely sure after my undergrad, and I want that to be like, I want people to know that, because I think a lot of people go through, yeah, I want to do this, and then it's like, oh my God, I'm burnt out. After my undergrad, I struggled a little bit. Well, I was kind of just sick of uni, and I went traveling, and it was actually the travel that gave me the perspective and the drive, and that's why I came back like guns blazing / fear of failure, and I went really well. But that definitely helped me as well. So I don't want people to think, you know, I was like born ready to do dentistry. I didn't even know it was possible for someone like myself to do something like dentistry until I was about 20, about 18, 19 maybe. So, yeah. But anyway, sorry, back to...
And then the other thing is, like, we're general practice dentists, and the majority of dentistry is general practice dentists. So rather than focusing on just academic performance, which also is super important, like Eli, well, myself especially was a mega nerd. Eli's a bit cooler than me at uni. With that, I think academic achievement is important, but it's also we're coming at it from a general dentist perspective. So generally things are, as I said, in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, and in practice there is. And it's like the practical realities of dentistry are actually really different to the theoretical background. Mm-hmm. And so you can know all the theory, but then you can not do dentistry. Yeah. So it's then looking at, well, who's going to be able to be those the best general dentists, who's going to lead the profession moving forwards, and trying to find those people who are really enthused, passionate about the chosen profession, because it's like, honestly, it's a wonderful profession. Like, we're so fortunate
to be
in the profession we are, and it's such a good group of people. Like, it contrasted, like, I imagine whenever I go to like ADA events and everything like that, and I feel fortunate to be around the people that are in the room. Where then if I was maybe a lawyer convention or a real estate agent convention or something like that, I don't know. I don't know if I'd feel exactly the same.
Yeah.
But I think for dentistry, it's like a wonderful bunch of people, and it's a fantastic profession. We're all so fortunate.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I've raved about that with someone else on the podcast already. It's something we're very lucky to do what we do, and it's not easy, but at the same time, it does afford us a lot of things, including quality of life. And, you know, we can go home at 5 o'clock and see our family, or 6 o'clock like it was tonight for me. and yeah, it's very different. So a lot of people, you know, get into medicine and then they're on call and they're this and that. We're pretty lucky in dentistry, that's for sure. So I've wanted to ask you this. Actually, James brought this question up, and I thought this was a really good question, but you teach graduates a lot of stuff when you do this course. Obviously, there's heaps that you can give graduates. What have you learned from the graduates in your courses?
Well, a few things. One is that I really like presenting.
Cool.
So pretty much it's like, of course, because I like being the center of attention.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why wouldn't I like being the center of attention in front of it?
Yeah, exactly.
So pretty much, so I actually like doing presenting. So we do a few, Eli and myself do a few public speaking gigs over the years. So yeah, that's really great. I enjoy that. Then it's also like it's just so rewarding to see people growing and improving over time, and that's been the other big thing. In terms of like specific little things, is just the first one that sprung to mind was a guy Cajun Chia who's doing it this year, and he was just talking about using your curing light to speed up the clotting process. So
in fact, Ash, who does the course, works with me, and he mentioned it to me and showed me a paper on it. I was like, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, this whole time I was just fascinated that it's like my curing light was sitting right there.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, surely someone would have just been like, they've done a filling like next to somewhere that was bleeding and then noticed that, oh, that clotted really quick. Maybe this is like, I just would have thought that somehow this would have come up and been a thing.
Yeah.
And so I just started doing it because Cajun was talking about it, and I'm like, huh, and did it. And I'm like, that really worked. And I'm like, how did no one like just pass that little thing on?
It's amazing.
So yeah, amazing. Like little things like that always come up.
Yeah. So with the graduates, you also probably see what graduates struggle with. What do you think are the main things graduates struggle with coming straight out of uni?
Probably like for myself, I felt caries removal was something that was a big issue. So generally for myself, when we were at clinic at uni, you just had to clean out the DEJ, and the deepest soft part you pretty much left for the demonstrator because they didn't want you to just drill into pulps left, right, center, which I completely understand. But then I was like ill-equipped to actually remove decay. I could just remove the decay of the DEJ and around the periphery really, really well. But then I remember then when we went on placement to Rockhampton with Don Knowles, then he had like checked the work and I'm like, yep, so remove the decay. And he's like, what about all the stuff that you left? You remove that as well. And I'm like, I just realized, I'm going to have to stand on my own 2 feet. So it was actually quite lucky that I had Don. So he then showed me through the process, and then the variation in terms of caries removal, like it's huge. There's no standardization, which I just again find fascinating. It's like seeing the last mini res, we were going through that, and it was some people did like between 500 and 40,000 revs, so that was the range, and then with and without water, from light pressure to hard pressure, and everything in between. So there was no consensus, and this was like all the different unis. And then so there was, and even the same unis, it wasn't like, at Sydney Uni, we do this. And at UQ, no, it was like, it just happened that the random demonstrator that I had.
Yeah, that's it.
He did this. And so he said, I do 10,000 no water. So that's what I do. Or like, I do 40,000 with water, so that's what I do. Or I do 2,000 with water, firm pressure. that was it. So I just find that amazing. Yeah. So
what do you do?
So, yeah, exactly. No, fair enough. So what I do is 40,000 revs with water with an extremely light touch.
Yeah, okay.
And then generally I try to describe then the feeling. So there's sort of goes from soft to leathery to maybe flaky clean. So this is, so scratchy, leathery, flaky clean, scratchy clean, squeaky clean.
Yeah.
That would be the, so I then remove to scratchy clean.
Yep.
Is what I've found is the delineation between infected and affected dentine. So flaky clean is not clean enough and squeaky clean is too clean.
It's too
so
clean,
scratchy clean is the key. So that's what I do.
Scratchy clean is the key.
That's it. Now, also, I can't remember what your original question was at all. I went on a tangent. That actually answered.
Yeah, it certainly did. It was things that graduates struggle with, but also the other side of that. What do you think graduates are actually quite good at? What are they doing well?
Yep. I might go back to struggle.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Please. So
do you have nothing that they're succeeding in?
That's why. Yeah.
I was one of those graduates, so that's fair enough. Yeah.
Exactly. I'll just list all your failings as a dentist and as a person. So I've got them in alphabetical order and chronological order. So which would you prefer?
Oh, mate.
So that's it. Then as well, Crown and Bridge seems to be something people not as confident in.
Is that the treatment planning of it or the actual physical performing the operation?
Even like choice of materials, when to use what, it's not really clear. It's sort of like this whole material science thing is people are confused.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So they just are not sure what to do, when do I use this. There's this all ceramics and there's zirconias and there's Emax and there's PFMs and I don't know what to use in what situation. And so in the end, again, all anyone does, it seems, is just like, well, I went to work in this practice and then the owner did this. So that's what I do now.
But we don't get much exposure to the different types of materials in university either. I think we were PFM or gold, depending on the situation. And that was it.
Yeah. Where if you looked at most people in private practice, how many people are placing PFMs now, the percentage would be extremely low.
Yeah.
But then definitely that's what's still being taught to a large extent at uni. It's sort of like these kind of things that people struggle, just not sure what to use. Treatment planning. As well is just a challenge. Like people seem to be able to look at a single tooth and make a decision on that, but then not being able to treatment plan a whole mouth. They go, how do I fit that single tooth into the bigger picture of the whole situation?
Yeah, so taking a step back and looking at everything. Yeah.
So it's like, well, is it actually worthwhile in this 85-year-old lady to do a root canal crown on a 2.8? So is that necessary? For saving that tooth, the root canal and crown is definitely best for saving that tooth, but that might not be the best for this 85-year-old lady. But then the good things, generally finding like the graduates are like so eager to learn and really open, as I mentioned, probably like better people than Eli and myself, just more motivated and really passionate about their chosen profession.
I can't imagine you not being extremely passionate and eager. And I've only ever met you jumping off the walls. And that's before the coffee.
Exactly. I'm like that in every single aspect of life. So maybe I was like got distracted by everything bright and shiny maybe when I was younger. So they're really good at that. Generally, the hand skills actually have been really impressed by. Everyone's really good. Like I look at the hand skills and I'm like, you can all do this.
I think I'll say something on that. Students, when you're like, if you're a student listening to this in first or second year and you just start like picking up a drill, I've used the word before in a blog. It looks like the Himalayas. Like we all sucked when we first picked up a handpiece. But you, even if you're someone who's a little bit shaky, like I'm someone, my hands aren't super steady, but I feel I can, like I have no issue with hand skills. And I'm only, a couple of years out. You'll definitely get there if you're a student who's struggling a little bit with hand skills. it just takes a bit of time.
I remember back at uni trying to practice the mirror vision.
Yes.
And I remember looking there and I'm like, so I'm looking in my mirror and I'm like, now move up,
yeah.
Move up, move up. Okay, I'm going to move up, move down. Damn it. And I'm like, okay, I'll do this again. Move up. Far out. And I'm like, and I remember thinking, so then I would just like look like a pretzel and just be wound around, work inside. Man. It's not even a real patient. This is just in like the sim lab. And then I remember thinking, I will never be able to do this.
Yeah.
This is impossible. And then
I think we all have that thought, hey.
Yeah. And then now it's like I just remember the other day, I don't even know if I'm in mirror vision I'm looking in direct vision. I'm not even aware of it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
My mind just compensates and I just do whatever I can see. I just drill the tooth correctly and my mind automatically does it.
It's amazing, hey. We don't even realize anymore. Well, I don't know if I'm actually that good. You're probably better at mirror vision than me, but you definitely, it just comes. Just take some time and you definitely are going to get there. Everyone is. So, Steve, you do so much for, you know, dental graduates with the award and the residency and everything you do. I personally want to say thanks. You've had a pretty big impact on me, obviously, and I appreciate that very much. I want to ask you one last question, and this is something I want you to have a good think about. If you could only teach one thing to all graduates, so you could get in the ear of every single graduate out there and teach them one thing when they're just about to graduate, what would that be?
Oh, it's so hard.
Just one thing.
Yeah, I know. I feel that treatment planning would make the biggest difference.
Yeah.
In terms of just the way that people look after their patients and care for their patients. I feel that would be the thing that would make the biggest difference and positively impact the most dental careers and the most patients.
Definitely.
So really being able to be the best possible at treatment planning. But then, as I said, like my biggest passion is sort of more about workplace culture and strategy. So I really just enjoy that. So from a selfish point of view, it'd be fun being able to teach people about that, about really having just amazing workplace cultures and realizing that I suppose just because we're in dentistry, like people, there's this stigma in society about dentistry that no one likes going to the dentist. It's okay to say, I hate the dentist to people's face. No offense. Where it's like, you can't do that. No one does that. They don't go up to their teacher. I hate teachers. No offense. Or like, people don't do that in the rest of society, but it's okay to do that to dentists. It's okay to say, I hate the dentist. And so it doesn't have a reputation as like being, this is amazing place to work. So being able to instill that in people, I would personally find that the most rewarding.
I think if you could, that would have such a big impact on people's quality of life and happiness and how much they actually enjoy the profession as well. Because a big part of the difficulties in dentistry is the workplace culture and the workplace itself, obviously. It's a massive impact. So it's something that a lot of people don't even think about until they end up in a workplace and are wondering why things don't quite gel or things do work. It's something you don't even think about. So thank you, Steve. You've given a lot. I've really appreciated hearing your story in depth, and I hope everyone out there has appreciated it too. If you're interested in what Steve's doing, Avenue Dental is the practice. They're at Caloundra, Maroochydore, and you just opened, is it Blyblock?
Blyblock as well, yes.
Yeah, awesome. Yep. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
The award is the Australian Graduate of the Year Award. If you are a student in final year and you haven't heard of this, you need to find out about it. Go on their Facebook, check out the website. I'll put links in the show notes. It's something you really have to know about. And if you're lucky, you might even get on that course, that mini residency course that Stephen Eli and Johan run, and it's absolutely amazing. So thanks again. Thanks for sharing your time. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, mate.
All right, welcome back. That was Stephen Dugin from Avenue Dental. Stephen and Eli have done a lot with their business, Avenue Dental. They got the best place to work under 100 employees in all of Australia twice. I think that's just amazing. But what matters more, I think, is what they're trying to do to help dental students and dental graduates. They've created the Australian Dental Graduate of the Year Award and the Australian Dental Minute Residency, which you can find details of at their website, australiandentalgraduateoftheyear.com.au, and on Facebook, Australian Dental Graduates. Thanks for your time, Stephen. And we look forward to the next podcast where Eli and Steve will come on together. I also want to say I'm sorry about a little bit of feedback on my end in this interview. Unfortunately, I only picked that up right after the interview, and I promise to try not to let that happen again. I'm really working on getting good audio quality for the podcast. So thank you for sticking in there. Our most recent tip on the Dental Head Start blog was about maintaining your access when you have a carious tooth that goes straight to the pulp. You want to restore the temporary before you start the endodontics. I suggested using a paper point, and this is something that I've done and found to work pretty well. But one of the things I love about this and social media is that we then got some responses and feedback from other people. Brendan and Natasha on the Facebook page suggested that you use a GP point instead, so it doesn't stick to the composite when you're bonding. And Dr. Bharat Agarwal on Instagram suggested using Teflon tape placed after you etch, prime and bond. And I love this feedback, and this is making me better, obviously. I am just a dental graduate like many of you. I'm trying to share those little tiny tips, but I don't know it all. So I really appreciate feedback and the community aspect of helping each other. You may have noticed that we had our first sponsor on the podcast, Dental Protection Limited. We really appreciate DPL sponsoring the podcast and plan to bring on other industry partners that can give value to our listeners. The whole point of having sponsors is to keep this free for you guys, but at the same time, I want it to be people or companies that can help you guys. And it's really important that this doesn't change anything I say or who I interview. So every single interview will be regardless of the sponsors. There is no doubt about that. If you have any questions about that, please just let me know. So thank you for listening. If you enjoy this, you can keep updated on our Facebook page, our Facebook group, or on Instagram, and hit the subscribe button to get these episodes every time they come out. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next episode.